My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network listeners. I am Jeff Hawkins, co-host of Shake Them Ropes, with a very special announcement. If it's been a while or you've never listened to us before, the original gang is back, myself and Rob McCarron, back talking wrestling. We have no idea where this show's going to go, where we're going to keep any of the old bits or any of the old things in there. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey, and we'd like for you to come along with us. Only on Shake Them Ropes on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Everybody, welcome to Super J Cast. I'm Jolt, joined by Daniel McDonald. It is Thursday, 6th of November, 2025. This is episode 386. It's a lovely part of the season, Damon. We've had Halloween, we've had fireworks night. That's a British thing. But we had a nice time here at home. Maddie made some toffee apples. We've got a box of crappy fireworks. I think you don't want to go too big on the fireworks while the kids are too young. You don't want to set the bar too high. So we had some mediocre ones that they thought were incredible, and then we can sort of build up to the big stuff, start taking some shows when they're older. But how was your Halloween?
Good and uneventful. We didn't have too many kids this year, which was fine by me. And our neighbors next door, though, they go somewhat all out, in the sense of they'll go out in their driveway and like have this like pop-up canopy thing and like a whole thing. So it's like, you know, it didn't matter what we had, people were just seeing that and kind of going over there and not bothering me, so it was great, right? Fantastic. And then I think a little bit later on, I had people over in the bar and we just hung out there for a little bit. It was all right. I mean, again, I don't know. Maybe I'm just getting old, dude, but like the Halloween shit. And I don't have kids either. So it's got to be a different experience. Yeah,
it's meaningless if you don't have children, I'd say. And we had a nice one. We went to visit my sister in Southampton. And
you're saying, yeah.
Her and her family are going back to New Zealand at the start of December. So this probably going to be the last time we see them for like goodness knows when. So it was really nice. Like Esther and Arthur with their cousins and trick or treat. They did lots of fun stuff together. And the last day, it was a Sunday, we went for a nice pub lunch and then came to say goodbye. And Esther had been sort of hanging back in the pub and just sort of fucking about in the way that young children do.
Right, they're picking up boys.
She came out about 5 minutes after the rest of us in tears because I think she'd been shouting at Arthur. And then apparently a lady, we don't know this lady, but a stranger had told her to be quiet. And Esther, very sensitive soul, she was very upset about that because she doesn't like to be in trouble. She doesn't like the idea of, you know, being naughty or thinking that she's a bad girl or whatever.
Aww.
So she was really upset by that. And then we were saying goodbye to my sister, and then when Esther went to give her a hug, like Esther was like crying, tears rolling down her cheek, and my sister saw and she thought Esther was upset because we were saying goodbye, and she was like, oh Esther, oh darling, don't worry, oh we'll definitely see each other again. I was like, don't tell her. Like, we didn't tell her. She was like, oh, she's just crying because someone lady told her off in the pub. It was a nice week. Good food in Southampton. Had some Korean barbecue. Not had that for ages. Oh, I had one of my most missed foods, which is jianbing, which is like a Chinese
savory crepe made from, I think it's mung bean flour, and they put like chili paste in it and egg and like a crispy cracker. I used to eat them all the time when I was in China, so that felt really good to have one of those.
Was it legit?
Okay. Proper good. It was a place called Happy Lemon. There's like a massive contingent of, I think, Chinese students at Southampton University. So wherever you get a university and there are Chinese students, you get fucking great Chinese food. So that was a real treat. And I was watching most of the Tanahashi homecoming show on my phone at the hotel whilst trying to feed breakfast to the kids. And I was watching the end of the Tanahashi Tsuji match whilst in a car park. So we were getting ready to check out the hotel. Mali, the car was parked about 5 minute walk away. So she was like, look, I'll get the kids ready. I'll bring the suitcases down. You go, you walk to the car park, get the car, bring it back here and pick us up. So I was sitting in the car, in this car park, watching the end of Tsuji versus Tanahashi, because I thought they were going to announce the final opponent there. Right. So I was like, come on, fucking hurry up, get on with it, because it's just taking forever. And then Yuto came out and I was just like, oh, I was just waiting for him to get out of the ring because I wanted to see if they were going to announce the opponent. And then Mally's phoning me, be like, where the fuck are you? What are you doing? I was like, ah! That was a
lot. And lo and behold, you were still left in the dark.
To show for it, empty-handed with an annoyed wife. So, yeah, good times. All the things that we hoped would happen last week, and neither of them did. So there you go. New Japan. Someone said, I think it was Drow who said this in the Discord. New Japan making sure nothing happens, but that nothing happens at an absolutely glacial speed.
Yeah, exactly.
That's just this year in a nutshell. But listeners, if you want to hear me talk about something I do actually like, me and the young boy Josh Smith from Keeping It Strong Style did over 2 hours.
Wow.
Monday night talking about the 1974 Texas Chainsaw Massacre film. And I unleashed my full mania, psychosis, obsession of that film. And I think it's really good. And a lot of people have said that they've really enjoyed it as well. So if you like that, you can upgrade, or you can buy it as a one-off thing. And it's really good. You're not going to find better analysis of one of the most seminal films in cinematic history. Like, no one else. I've listened to pretty much every podcast or discussion or video review there is of that film. No one comes close to the excellence that me and Josh delivered on that. So check it out.
Josh, a big fan as well?
Oh, yeah. Not as much as me, but as we sort of like 1.5 hours in, he's like typing messages on Zencaster being like, Joel, can you fucking wrap this up, please? My wife's getting annoyed. I was like, okay. So I was like trying to speed run it. I was like, and then this happens.
Ref's like, take it home. You're like, well, I can hit my spot.
I was like, you and Wimmer are out there. They're like, fucking wrap it up, my dude.
That's awesome. I'll definitely listen. My week has been just pinned with covered sports stuff. I had to do like 2 basketball games. Like, I was like, what the fuck? And then a lot of, and a lot of hockey still, but it was just, everything was just, whatever. Busy. Like, I feel like I have, I wake up, I work, I do other work. It's pitch dark. I come home. And I take an Ambien and fucking pass out. I mean, that's literally been my life. Swear to God. That's about it. It's been a whirlwind. And again, we are on other sides of the world, and the stupid roll back the clock, fall back, whatever the fuck. So it's always like a little bit of a negotiation thing of, okay, so can you start a little bit early? Can you start a little bit later? Can you do that? But we got it sorted out. What is it, 9 over there?
Yes, it is.
Oh God, it's terrible. All right, we'll do our best to make it a tight run show here.
Usually 9. It was only 8 o'clock for about a week when the British clocks went back slightly before the Yankoid ones did. So it's fine.
Well, I mean, listen,
it's good for me because that's when my children are asleep. If I did it any earlier than that, they'd fuck up the whole thing. So
I know too, but I don't want to like have you up till 11 o'clock talking about this dumb shit. Especially with all the fucking nonsense.
This is the thing, right? This isn't about having kids. I want to stay up as late as possible because that's the only free time I've got. Like, as soon as the kids are asleep, I'm like, okay, great. And again, don't get me wrong, I adore spending time with them, but I spend my whole day around children. So any time I'm not spent around children is a blessing to me. Like, yeah. I really save at that time. So what is the most irritating thing for me is when they go to sleep and I'm like, right, I'm going to do something. I'm going to, you know, play a video game or watch a movie or watch a wrestling show, a football match, whatever. And I start falling asleep.
Yeah.
Like 9:30. I'm like, fuck no. I don't want to go to sleep. I'd rather like sabotage the next day, make myself tired. Like I force myself to stay awake just because I want that little bit of time to myself. That's all. That's all.
I hear you loud and clear. But imagine having that same thought and not having kids. I do that. Like the minute I feel like I can sit down and be like, all right, I'm going to put on this fucking game or I'm going to watch this show or whatever. It's like, I could feel my body just being like, oh, you've stopped? Okay. We're going to shut everything down.
If you stay at a restaurant past closing time and they start like dimming the lights on you. That's what my brain does to me.
Exactly. Yeah. Dimming the lights. They turn on the lights here. It's like they start like, okay, we're getting brighter. We're getting brighter. Get the fuck out. Yeah.
Until it looks like a New Japan house show.
Oh, yeah. Topical and funny.
That's why we're the best.
That's right. It reminds me of we have the same fucking, not me and you have the same bedroom routine. That would be awesome. Me and my missus.
We should do it. We should synchronize.
We probably do. So hear me out. No, probably not. Cause you have a whole thing that you guys do with the kids and everything. But anyhow, long story short is we always go up to bed and we always pop on the TV and always just like watch YouTube videos, right? And we have a pattern of, what's that?
You're watching the same videos together?
Yes.
That's nice. Me and Maddie never watch anything together.
No? So again, it's just some random people that we just enjoy and, you know, whatever. Like one of them is a guy who goes, like, he lives in Alaska and he camps in Alaska. Like he builds like these igloo, survival forts, and like survives. I don't know why I'm fascinated by it. Like this guy fucking surviving overnight in like -20 degrees Celsius fucking weather, building shelters. And the guy's just like this big goofy, like tall, goofy guy, but he's just lovable. I don't know why. And he always makes food and he eats with these big choppers. He's like, and we always make fun of them eating. So anyway, there's another one that we watched that we've started to watch. My feed has been flooded with these now. Are these Japanese salarymen who hate their lives? They don't talk on the videos. They just kind of show the videos, but then they'll do like, you know, captionings underneath. They hate their lives. They're all getting divorces. They all have kids. They all feel like they can't talk to their wives and their wives can't talk to them. And they all are just so miserable. And Cheryl is like yelling at the TV, like, why don't you just talk to her? Just talk to her. That's all you have to do is just talk. I feel the same way. But
it's like sort of following them around, like their daily routines or something.
Yep. Yep. But it's just
I watch some of those. I like those like Japanese, I've watched them with like salarymen or like female office workers. I find that fascinating, like me watching too. Just their whole routine from the moment they get up and their little routines they go through in their little apartments and, you know, all their tidiness and neatness and the meals they're preparing themselves. I love it. I'm with you, man. It's fascinating to me.
I just find that just, and again, it's like there are probably four different ones that are exactly the same theme. But I'm just like, my God, there's so many miserable people living there. Like they just hate their lives. And like, you know, they work 15 hours a day. And, you know, again, they never talk to their wives. And they kind of explain the dichotomy of being married, but not having being in a cold and distant relationship, even in the same house. And I don't know. It's just, you know, you're just yelling at the TV, like, just open up to her. Just talk to her. Don't blow it. And Cheryl always takes like the wife side. Well, if he would just fucking bitter, and I'm like, well, maybe he can't. I don't know. Maybe she's a whore. I don't know. You know, you're getting one side of the story here. Who knows what the real story is? You know, maybe she's banging the entire block. I don't know. You know. But yeah, that's our lives. That's where we are right now. That and like weird friend stuff, like. I don't even want to get into it here, but like we just have like I just have weird friends, man. I just have weird friends, just that say and do things that you're just like, what are you doing? Like, why would you? Why? Ugh. I know. I you know what? Just change the subject because it just makes me angry.
I didn't have any friends. Now I had one friend here in Devon.
Really,
he was a fellow Arsenal fan, and I used to really enjoy meeting up with him. And now he fucking split up with his wife, and he's not living here anymore. I was like, "You bastards! Can you guys go to therapy or something?" Right? He sort of plays games with man.
All they have are sheep out here. That's true. You don't have a fucking.
I did. Okay, so I've got a potential for a new friend.
Okay.
There's this guy I sort of work with. Like he's a substitute teacher sometimes at my school, and he's an Arsenal fan as well. Right. And I text him. I got his number from another teacher. This sounds really weird. I text him. I was like, "Where do you usually watch Arsenal games?" And he said he watches them at this little village where he lives at the Conservative Club. And I was like, do I, you know, go out and enjoy watching an Arsenal game and make new friends, but in a Conservative Club? Like, I don't know what kind of vibe that is. Is it going to be like everyone be like, "Oh, rah rah rah, up the Tories," kind of thing?
Or
is it
right, just, right. I hate immigration.
I did mention it to him, and he was just like, "Oh no, it's just a place where the booze is cheap." And I was like, "Okay," but there's still a little bit of me that's like,
right, right. You know, you walk out of there, it'll be like some camera crew. Oh, what are you doing in there? What the?
Well, what if I get radicalized, Damon? And right. Then I start becoming a conservative.
Right, right. Listen,
I start being on the podcast, being like, you know what, that Zach Sabre Jr. don't really care for him. His economics they don't work. They don't add up.
You know what happens when the millionaires leave, Joel? We just went through our elections, and that was a nightmare, just because it was constant. Like, do you have the that thing where it's legal to have political ads just bombard you in your life, in everywhere you go?
They have them on TV like around election time, but they're always clearly labeled. Like, this is a political party broadcast by the Labour Party or whatever.
Yeah. Are they like,
turn the TV off?
Janet Jones pees on babies. You know, it's like the most, like, this guy supports pedophiles. And what?
They're probably getting there. I mean, we follow everything that the you Yankoids do just about like 10 years later than you do it. So yeah. I'm sure it's coming.
Be ready for it, because it's one of the most embarrassing things. Because, you know, I say that a little, trying to, you know, give you an extreme example, but those commercials of, this woman's a pedophile and this man supports, like, just crazy nonsense. You're just like, oh my God. And so we get that just like on any TV show, it's like back to back to back to back to back. Just, you're just swamped with them. But also, it's gotten bad in the past 2 years of the text messages. So during election season, we'll get, on average, between myself and Cheryl, we'll get probably 50, probably 25 each a day of text messages. And you try and opt out, but it's all on robo-dial. So they're changing the number that they're dialing from to send out these things. It's 100% legal. And I'm like, how is this legal? How is this legal? It's unbelievable. So thank God that's over with, because it really is incredibly annoying. I'm going to be honest with you. I hate politics so fucking much. I just hate it. I just hate the lies and the deceit on both ways, and the way that they play with people's emotions and the way that they just use people. It's like, I'm sorry. I can't get into it. I hate it so fucking much.
I'm with you, man. I'm totally disillusioned. There are no good options anymore. There are some options are worse than others, but there are none that I think are viable that actually represent my beliefs. I've given up. So I just sort of keep myself to myself and watch the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I truly believe that, like, the idea of voting is important. Like, I honestly truly do. But unfortunately, in this country, it's like you got two choices. You got either the Nazi or the radical liberalist who's going to, it's like, God almighty, what are we doing? Ah, it's such a pain in the ass. I hate it so much. It's so phony. It's more pro wrestling than pro wrestling. You know what I mean? And it's just people's lives that are at stake. No big deal. No worries. Hey, talking about lives at stake, what's going on in the world of pro wrestling?
Well, Damon, we had a big show going on in the world of pro wrestling, specifically Shinnihon Pro Wrestling. I've got too many tabs open here. Let's close some of these. Let's get rid of that. And that,
porn.
That's better. Porn, close the porn. keep getting in trouble with the wife because I've been watching the Texas Chainsaw Massacre basically nonstop, almost an entire week trying to compile my notes. Right. And she was like, and because I'm watching it and writing notes in such detail, I'm like pausing at particular scenes. Like there's a scene with a meat hook and I pause it and she's like, and I'm typing and then playing a bit more and then pausing it. And she's looking over at me and lying in bed next to me like, what the fuck are you doing? You maniac. Like at that point, she'd rather I was just watching porn.
Right. She'd rather see a double penetration than fucking what is on the TV. You know what I mean?
You maniac.
Yeah. You fucking. Whatever. Now, there has never been a time where she's like, hey, why don't I sit? Because I know you enjoy it so much. Maybe I'm missing something. I want to share this. No, that's not happening.
No. She's made
no
effort. And I respect that, right? I've tried. I've been like, do you want to watch a wrestling show together? I've tried to take her to a live Arsenal game, like take her to the Emirates Stadium just for the experience. She's just not interested in it. She said, look, I'll get bored. I'll just be playing on my phone. You take someone else. And yeah, I respect that. I think she thinks it's important that we have our separate interests, and like we do plenty of stuff together. It's not an issue. Like I'm not concerned that we don't have any common interests. Like we love eating, going out to restaurants, going to shows, going for walks, doing stuff with the kids. So we get plenty of time together. But when it comes to consuming media, that is a purely individual thing in our relationship. She likes to watch her Thai TV, which is absolutely repugnant to me, and I just watched the Texas Chainsaw Massacre on a loop.
She's like, Joel, I want to watch something and I want to share it with you. And what if it winds up being double penetration? Would you be like, all right, now we're talking. Yeah, now we have common ground.
Right, let me just finish this particular viewing of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Right. When that's done, I'll be right with you.
Right. But Joel's like, oh, that would be great. We could do that. Oh, I don't even have a friend. God damn it. I can't. Sorry. I don't have anybody else. All right. Boy, we got off track quickly on that. Okay. Big show.
Yeah. Hiroshi Tanahashi, final homecoming, Gifu Memorial Center, 3,742. Good number. Well done. That's good. Obviously, it was a draw having Tanahashi's final show in his hometown there. Open up with some young lions who did some stuff. I can't be bothered to read the... he was participating. Second match, there was Daiki Nagai, Gedo Hiromu against Hartley Jackson, Fujita, Robbie Eagles. Third match, okay, now I do have something on this one. So this is Yuki Yoshioka, Kushida, Dragon Dyer, and Yusuke Taguchi defeating Yamato, Tiger Mask, Kukai, and El Desperado. So it was like the leftovers from Super Junior Tag League facing off against each other. But I do want to make a correction and an apology from last week where I incorrectly stated that Yuki Yoshioka and Yamato were the Dragon Gate Tag Champions. They're not the tag champions of Dragon Gate. The Dragon Gate Tag Champions are actually Dragon Dyer and Yamato. They're the tag champions. So apologies to the Dragon Gate fans for getting that wrong. That will not happen again. I've done my due diligence this time and got the correct information. So sorry.
I thought they were. Oh, well, okay. Because I thought there was that net. Well, okay.
Right, fourth match then. No, who cares? It's Dick Togo, Kanemaru, Yujiro, Ren, Eve. I'm getting bored just reading out the names in this match. Against Watto, Yo, Yano, Yuya, Shota Umino. Dick Togo pinned Master Watto, didn't he? And we got his was it Insane in the Brain? That was his entrance music, and then they the dubbing it. This one was notable because at the end of the match, they had another Aaron Wolf run in where he came into the ring as Evil's about to hit Yano with the NEVER title, and he snatched it out of his hands and kind of stared blankly at Evil for a bit, and then did a judo throw on him, and then kind of lovingly and tenderly put his hand on Evil's back. And then Evil rolled out of the ring, and then Aaron Wolf stared blankly at him a bit more, and it was a bit awkward and a bit rubbish. He'll get there. Like, this is it. Like I said, this is an absolute rookie. He's never had a proper wrestling match in his life, so we need to manage our expectations here. But even so, watching that, I was a bit like,
that's our future right there, my man. Come on, how dare you? But I will say this though, I think they are doing a pretty good job with. Again, execution's going to be a little bit hit or miss, just like you said. But I think actually New Japan's doing a pretty decent job building this match.
Yeah, they'll get it right at the dome. Like, it's going to be huge. The atmosphere, I'm sure, is going to be electric when they're wrestling each other. And from what I hear, Evil has been very hands-on in the training of Aaron Wolf. So, yeah, I've every confidence that when they get to the dome, it's going to deliver. Well, I say that, there's a little bit of me scared that it's going to be a complete disaster, but, that's isn't it? That's what makes it interesting. It
is. Yep, it does. It does make it a little bit more interesting. You are going to be sitting a little bit more on the edge of your chair, like, oh, come on. But I guarantee you, they're going to walk through this match a trillion times. The problem is that, oh, now I got to do this in front of 43,000 people, or, 40,000, whatever, or 35,000, whatever. But you get my point. Evil is going to have. Here's the problem. What's going to happen is that constantly throughout this match, and rightfully so, I'm sure there'll be plenty of people at ringside. Plenty, Evil's going to be very vocal. He's going to want to do a million things. Maybe not a million things. He's going to be told to do two things probably, and just make sure you do them well and don't rush it. Like, just breathe, take your fucking time. But you get out there and it's just, a second feels like 4 hours. So, but he's got plenty of people in there to help him along. He's just got to be, he's got to be loose with it. He's got to be willing to listen and just do what they say, and he'll be fine.
Yeah. I think what they should do is have Aaron Wolf chase Evil around the outside of the ring for 40 minutes and just play down the clock. So there's no time for the other two matches.
That'd be great to go outside. They take the train. That'd be awesome. They stop at the pub over there by Tokyo Dome, get a couple of beers.
TGI Fridays, knocking over all the appetizers.
Yeah. They try to go to the newsstand that's closed. They're like, fuck, I love this place.
Spitting zebras in each other's faces. It writes itself, Damon. Exactly. Classic pro wrestling. Right. Fifth match was Clark Connors, Oscar, Yuta, Ice, and Shingo Takagi defeating Jacob Austin Young, Templario, Callum Newman, Great O'Conn. This one was really interesting for the interactions between Callum Newman and the Knockout Brothers, because that was very intense, really fiery. They were getting in each other's faces, pulling each other hair. They were going hard. And obviously there's a lot of sort of Euro/Brit-rest connections and history between them. So I'm sure they're like really keen on doing something memorable and fiery to help get everyone over. And this is the first time we've seen Callum in ring since the G1 Climax, which is really curious because I thought he had a really good G1 and I thought he built up a lot of momentum with that Dontaku match, which I know was a long time ago, but for him to just have nothing between then and now was a bit odd to me. I'm not really sure what the story is there, but he had it's a really interesting backstage promo from the three of them. So yeah. It's Reto Khan and Templario and Callum Newman. So Callum Newman's lying on the floor and he's like, all right, you guys go first. And then Reto Khan just looking totally disinterested is like, how could Sparrows understand the aspirations of Cranes? That's all. And then he's like gesturing at Templario. He's like, okay, finish.
And he's like, I'm happy to be here.
The most perfunctory lucha wrestler in Japan, like, oh, I love being here, I love team with you guys, thank you to the Japanese fans, I'm gonna give my all, can't wait to be back here again. And then Callum Newman gave a very interesting promo. He did. Like, what did you make of that? Because I wasn't sure whether to interpret that as you know, this guy is fired up because there's a big angle incoming. No. But then I remember, oh no, we don't do that in New Japan anymore, do we? So maybe this is just a guy letting off steam because he's frustrated with the fact that nothing happens in New Japan.
Oh, it felt like that was the case, didn't it? He was just like, he sounded like a guy frustrated looking at, in LinkedIn, knowing that he wants to quit his job, but there's nothing out there. Like, he's just like, fuck me. What the fuck am I doing? What are we doing? What's happening? I mean, at the end, he tried to tie it all together, but yeah, I mean, that was a good example of letting some steam out, to say the least. And, yeah, if you go out of your way to watch it, I'll go so far as to say that if you haven't seen it, go out of your way to watch it, because again, you take everything in pro wrestling with a pinch of salt, but it did feel like this guy was at the end of his rope. Like, what the fuck else do I got to do for this company? You know, basically saying I've been all over this country. I can't please anybody anymore. What the fuck? I'm just going to do it myself and go fuck everybody. But it was an interesting post-match presser, if you will.
Oscar's promo was really good as well. He was like very scathing with some really good like cutting lines about
he's growing on me.
And United Empire. He's yeah, I'm excited about him. I think there's more to him than just generic big man. And I would love to believe that there's some kind of narrative significance there that maybe Callum and the Knockout Brothers are going to unite somehow and, you know, maybe bring them into United Empire, might make a new faction or something, but you know, who knows at this point. But the fact that they were specifically calling each other out, like Yuta Ice had a really good promo, like it, and even though he's obviously speaking in Japanese, like, you know, when you can just tell that right. A guy is a good promo even if it's not in a language you can understand, and the way he was talking about Callum is like, yeah, you do it for the thrill of the fight. I can tell by looking in your eyes you've had a rough upbringing as well. Yeah, you're different, you know, let's have some fun together. So I was like, okay, cool, like there's definitely something here if they want it, but you know, nothing happens in New Japan, so who knows.
Right. That's an interesting thing though, that I think that might breathe some new life, specifically Knockout Brothers, whether that's a United Kingdom or an offshoot, or you know, they just completely scrap the idea and start anew. I might actually like that, actually. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, like, I'm hearing stuff like next year is going to be like a big factional reset and all the factions are going to get, you know, reshuffled and stuff. But I have heard stuff like
that. You heard that before. A lot. Yeah.
I'm just very wary of that.
I wouldn't be surprised, though, in that same breath. I wouldn't be surprised if we hear a lot of moving going on in right after Wrestle Kingdom. You know how, like, after Wrestle Kingdom, there's always something that drops and always something that seems like, you know, oh, these guys are coming in or these guys are leaving in a lot of years.
You mean everyone, all the foreign wrestlers hitting Sean Ross up and the DMs are being like, my contract's up.
Yeah, right, maybe. Yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised. I don't be surprised come January 5th and 6th. You're getting some emergency audio, because I don't know if a lot of them are worthy of emergency, but yeah, I think this will be and I don't know anybody's contract situation. I don't give a fuck, but I think there'll be people saying, see you, wouldn't want to be you.
Yeah, I really hope they do something with Callum Newman, because I think there's so much potential there. Because since he had that Dontaku match, he's just been behaving like a prick, and it's a really good fit for him. And he's kind of changed up his wrestling style. He's wrestling more like Devitt, and again, I think that's a good fit for his sort of physique. And yeah, you don't want to see a massive guy like that trying to do all flippy stuff. He shouldn't. He should be like kicking the shit out of people and talking trash, which is what he's doing. So I really hope that they utilize him and, you know, do some good stuff with him. There was just another little interesting thing. Clark Connors had a backstage promo here where it seemed to indicate that he was going home, and he was doing hand gestures and referencing his romantic partner Tekla, who's in AEW. So a lot of people interpreted that as him like wrapping it up with New Japan and he's going to AEW. Who knows? Like, I again, I've not heard anything about people leaving or contract stuff. You know, sometimes I get told, yeah, this person's done, and then they're booked for the next tour. So it's very hard to pass that out. So until there's anything official. I'm sort of holding my horses on saying anything definitive about Clark Connors. And I did feel like the introduction of Wheel Sand was his quiet quitting phase. So wouldn't shock me if he does leave the company. But yeah, there you go. It's just a little interesting tidbit in his backstage promo.
Well, listen, they'll get rid of a lot of people, but you know, just know that you have the comfort of Don Fallet and Chase Owens just to hold down the fort. So don't worry. Everything's all right.
Sixth match was the Super Junior Tag League final, where the A block winners, Sho and Doki, defeated the B block winners, Robbie X and Taiji Shimori, 15 minutes and 1 second. So Doki pinned Taiji Shimori. He misted him in the face and then did a low blow and then did a roll up and then pulled his tights.
Yeah.
So he did everything. He did all of the cheating. And the Bebler asks, has there ever been a tournament as pointless that achieved as little and that dragged its balls across the face of the fans as much as Super Junior Tag League 2025? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Doki and Sho went undefeated as champions. I think that's the first time that's ever happened in the current format of the Super Junior Tag League. And yeah, I was pretty upset when that happened. I was just like, what the fuck? Like, it just felt like the most hostile booking, where it was actively punishing people who had been following the tour. Because you watch a tour like that, not just hoping to see good matches, but you want to see some progression and you want to see some, you know, new stars being made and some storyline stuff happening and new challenges being established and the future direction of the division being shaped before your eyes. But we got none of that. Like, it felt the complete opposite. It felt like they deliberately killed the entire division. And maybe that's a good move, because it's, you know, it wasn't exactly the most stacked Super Junior Tag League we've ever had. The match itself, it was all right. I mean, if you can kind of squint to see the fact that all the cheating that Doki and Sho do, like, that's just their regular moveset at this point. You know, at least we're not getting outside run-ins from Dick Togo and Don Fale and all those cunts. They are just, they're doing cheating, but it's just the two of them doing the cheating. So I'm like, okay, well, fine. I can hold my nose and swallow that. But for me, the real final of the Super Junior Tag League was the November 1st show, the main event of that. So that was in the Osaka Eddie and T. It's a really brilliant match between the Ichiban Sweet Boys and Robbie X and Ishimori to decide who won the B block. And that was great. And it kind of broke my heart watching that, because it felt like the four of them knew, look, the match, the final is going to be crap. We know who's winning. We know it's not going to be any good. So let's try and end this tournament with an actual good match and do a match that's worthy of the final here, because we know the fans aren't going to be getting that match at the Tanahashi homecoming show. And they worked their socks off, like all four of them. Like, Robbie X looked really good. And you know, Robbie Eagles, the Robbie on Robbie violence was superb. Like, we know Robbie Eagles is one of the most selfless workers and is a master at helping other wrestlers look good. And he made Robbie X look really good here.
And Robbie X held his own, though. Yeah, you know, it wasn't like it was a carry job.
Absolutely not. Like, I totally agree with you, Damon. Like, Robbie X has come on leaps and bounds, as you would hope and expect doing tours like this. And he's not doing as many as... I haven't noticed any of the, you know, convoluted Brit rest sequences. He's, you know, a little angry terrier-like high flyer, and he seems to have endeared himself to the fans and the company as well. So that was really nice. Like, I have absolutely no complaints about him being elevated. Like, I think there should be like a company directive to try to push foreign talent who are like AW proof. Like, Tony Khan's gonna have no interest in. So guys like, you know, Robbie X and Jacob Austin Young, who, like, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying they're bad wrestlers, they're very good wrestlers, but they just, you know, they're not
on his radar yet. Yeah.
Yes, right. And they probably won't ever have that sort of appeal where they're gonna end up in Tony's toy box. So, you know, that was one of the small, like the minor good things that came out of this tournament, was the elevation of Robbie X, because he looked really good in this tournament. Ishimori going this deep was a curious one as well. Like, I was wondering if that's them just like throwing him a bone so he can push his endless produce shows, because he did one last month. He's doing one like in next week or the week after that as well. So yeah, and again, I'm really sort of trying my best to find some nuggets of gold in amongst the shit, and it is a lot of shit. Like, really, what did this tournament achieve anything meaningful? Nothing. Like, again, my interpretation is that they are deliberately trying to put the division on ice because I don't think they're going to have a junior tag match at Wrestle Kingdom. Like, my understanding is that for the main card, due to the fact that it's been live broadcast on TV Asahi, it's going to be significantly shorter than a normal Wrestle Kingdom would be. So I'm expecting like 7 matches tops. And I just don't think the junior tag titles will fit into that. So I think they've done that on purpose. They're not going to have it at Wrestle Kingdom because there were no challengers. No one came out afterwards and be like, oh, we want the next shot at your tag titles. It was like they've killed off the entire division. And I will say, at the very least, like they are trying to establish Doki as the top guy in the division because he's a junior champion. He's a junior tag champion. He's an undefeated super junior tag league champion. So like, junior division completed it, mate. He's done everything. So he, in kayfabe at least, with his recent achievements, he is the guy to beat. But again, I'm not excusing it because I still think it is horrible booking, but it's about what I expect from New Japan at this point. And it makes me think back to last year. Remember, was it last year when we had the Super Junior Tag League final that was Catch 2-2 against Ichiban Sweet Boys? And it was one of my favorite matches. It was fucking tremendous. Yeah. And now I'm sitting here thinking, well, it's not that bad when Cho and
don't cheat. right.
Because other wrestlers don't involve themselves in the match. Like a real, you know, curate's egg situation. But
it's amazing.
The one little thing interesting that was good going forward was when they had the backstage stuff, Kosei Fujita came out to talk some shit to Doki backstage, and Doki told him to like fuck off and said, you've got to bring something to the table. So it does make me think, in terms of the direction for the junior singles title at Wrestle Kingdom, I do think we're going to get Doki versus Fujita, which is what I wanted. So that's good. That's exciting if they go with that. But in terms of the junior tag division, it's dead. They've killed it.
It felt rushed, the whole tournament. I just felt like it was like a sprint to get to the end. It feels like they forgot they even had to do it, and then they were just like, all right, we're just fucking throw this. It really did.
You had to do your homework. You're like, fuck, this is a Super Junior Tag League. What are we going to do? Yeah, Dragon Gate on the phone.
Right, seriously. That's really the vibe I was getting, the whole entire sprint of this thing. Yeah, I mean, look, I felt bad for a lot of the teams because it did feel pretty pointless, and it did, not to say that a lot of the teams were going through the motions, but it was just kind of like, okay, we just got to get through this. If we're looking for silver linings and goodness to come out of this, it does feel like we have something that feels a bit more interesting for the heavyweight title, the junior heavyweight title, that is. Look. You're right. To me, the finals were, you know, a night or two previous. look, to answer the question that whoever was the worst, I don't know if it was the worst, but you know, it's in the bottom of the pile. Nobody's going to be referencing this in 5 years or 2 years or 1 year. We'll forget next year when we do the preview for the Super Junior. We'll be like, what happened? Because it's just, nothing is memorable. But we got through it. I guess that's the best thing. And I will say this as well, as weird as this does sound, as much as they threw away the junior tag tourney, it does feel like World Tag League, in which they announced the participants. It does feel a little fresh. I saw the lineups and I was like, holy fuck. And I know we'll talk about it, but at least they put something into that made it a little bit more interesting. But again, we'll get there.
It's a zero-sum game, isn't it? Like, only one of the tag divisions can be good at any one time.
Right. I find that amazing. Isn't it amazing? Like, there were times, yes. Even at their peak, it felt like the heavyweight tags championships were just like, okay, you know, throwaway things, and the juniors were pumping out great stuff, and then vice versa. It's weird. I don't know why they can't do two things at once. Like, I don't know why they can't do four things at once, but oh well.
I'll do it. So if anyone's listening, just DM me. I'll do it for free. I'll book you whichever tag division you don't want to book. I'll do it for you.
Yeah. I that's why, like, why don't they do that? I know they have like a lot of people committee wise, and there, you know, there's a lot of people with input, but man, they can't figure, like, just give somebody a role, focus on that, and just do that. Like, well, where's the harm in that? I don't understand, but yeah, they haven't figured it out yet. So, oh well.
Seventh match was the IWGP Global Heavyweight Championship match where Yota Tsuji defeated Hiroshi Tanahashi, 20 minutes, 5 seconds with a Gene Blaster. And yeah, this is really fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like, I continue to be impressed by how Hiroshi Tanahashi, despite his reducing mobility, is able to put on really compelling and dramatic matches and put together exciting closing sequences with lots of, you know, reversals and near falls that had me biting. Like, there were moments where I was like, oh shit, Hiroshi Tanahashi's going to win the global title. They're going to bury Yota Tsuji, but they didn't in the end. But yeah, I thought they did an outstanding job in making a match that was exciting and made Tsuji look good as well. And there was one interesting wrinkle to this in the closing stretch where Tanahashi did a move that he's not done before, where he put Yota Tsuji onto his shoulders in a fireman's carry and then transitioned that into a sort of falcon arrow move. And apparently that is Shinsuke Nakamura's old finisher, the landslide.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, yeah, just an interesting thing. I'm sure he did that for absolutely no reason. But yeah, match was very, very good. So, like, the post-match stuff was nice and emotional, and basically Hiroshi Tanahashi gave Yota Tsuji the keys to the car and said, like, right, I'm entrusting New Japan to you. And I love that. And I'll talk about Tsuji a bit later on and why he's my guy and all that. But yeah, the match itself, very, very good. And Yuta Ice came out afterwards to challenge for Andrade. Now, bear in mind, right, I'm sitting there in the car watching this on my phone in the car park while Mal is like, what are you doing? Hurry up. And it's on my phone. It's a tiny screen. And I'm just like staring at it. And I saw a figure appear in the on the ramp. I was like, who is it? Like, who is it? And then it was Yuta Ice. And I was like, oh, shit. They're not going to do that for Wrestle Kingdom, are they? So I'm listening to his promo and just trying desperately to hear if he says Itenyon, because that's the only bit of Japanese I know. That means January 4th. So I was like, is this at the Tokyo Dome? But it's not. So he's going to challenge it at the show on Saturday in Anjo, which I think is great, because I think I might have been lamenting on this podcast a few weeks ago that it's a shame that Yuta Ice and Hiroshi Tanahashi are not going to have a match. So it's really good that they have decided to do that. And I'm curious if that was something that they planned all along, or as if are they sort of calling an audible and saying, well, okay, this Yuta Ice guy is actually really good and he's getting some good crowd reactions. They've got a built-in story there with both of them from Gifu. And I like the sort of narrative work that Chris Charlton put into it, where he said Yuta Ice wants to be the toughest guy in Gifu, and when he found out that there was a championship winning professional wrestler, he was like, right, that's not acceptable to me. I've got to find this guy and beat him. So I'm really looking forward to that match on Saturday. I think it's going to be good, and I'm interested to see how the styles mesh. And again, I, despite not understanding Japanese, I can sense that Yuta Ice cut a really good promo. Obviously we've got the translations, but he seems to be able to execute that with, you know, confidence and charisma, and the fans seem to be getting behind him. So, yeah, all in all, like I say, coming at the end of this, despite not finding out who the Wrestle Kingdom opponent, we'll set that to one side for now. But just in isolation, the match was really good, and the vibes were good. I like Yuta Ice challenging. That's nice.
It was cool. And again, I did not think that we were in jeopardy of having that as Wrestle Kingdom match. I got to once again tip my cap to Hiroshi Tanahashi for like not leaving any stone unturned. Like, he's willing to get in the ring with everybody and everyone and put in the hard work to help. I don't know. Again, the Tanahashi rub, does it mean anything at this point? Debatable, but I think everything helps. Anything that won't hurt, right? I sat there watching that match, and I got to be honest with you. I was like amazed at how he being Hiroshi Tanahashi, is able to physically do this. Trust me, when we were in March and April and May, and we're like, oh my God, how is this fucking guy going to survive? Some of these matches were pretty, you're tugging at your collar. It was, sometimes it was felt like the year would never end. Yet here we are, beginning of November, and I'm starting to feel the little pings of, my God, what a fucking legend this guy is. And the fact that he was able to go out there for 20 some odd minutes, close to 30, have a great match against a guy that's, you know, what, in his 20s? Tsuji's in his 20s, right? Late 20s?
No. So.
You have to look it up. Anywho, but you get my point. Like, we're talking a battered and knee on knee. There is no cartilage on any of them. Hips shot. Biceps. I mean, go through all the injuries that even that we know of, let alone all the ones that go unmentioned. And yet, when the light shined the brightest, he was out there giving it his fucking all. And look, I'm not going to sit here and be like, yeah, these guys give their bodies every fucking... Well, they do, right? They really do. And... You know, sometimes we miss that when it comes to analysis. And, you know, this is a very physically demanding profession. And he went out there, and when, let's be honest, you were hoping for the best, but you got a unbelievably solid match. Unbelievably, like, again, this is not something where, you know, it's going to be in the best of New Japan Pro Wrestling of all time, but... Like, for that moment, I thought this was a very good to great match. I really did. I was into it. I was, and you're right. I was buying the fact that there were times that, like, even with all that we know, wow, is he going to do this? Is he going to pull this off? Look, he's, I think in our lifetime, I'll speak for me. I won't speak for anyone else. I'll speak for me. In my lifetime, he's top three pro wrestlers. He's just an amazing talent, smart, and gets the most out of whatever he has left. And what is even more exciting is that match was tremendous. In the big building at the Tokyo Dome, he finds whatever drugs he needs or whatever spiritual healing or whatever cup therapy, massage, whatever it takes to drag his ass out there. And he puts on just unbelievable moments. I can't sit here and tell you that he doesn't have one left in him. So I don't know. It got me more excited. It absolutely got me more excited. And not to say that I wasn't like acknowledging it and knowing that it was coming around the corner, but I really felt like if anything, this match helped me to really get pumped up for that last match. Cause I think it's going to be, I think he's got one more left in the tank. And if he does pull off a great match at the Dome in that moment, he might go down as the greatest of all time.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Damon. And how could anyone doubt him at this point? I have every confidence that he's going to knock it out of the park at Wrestle Kingdom and make his last ever professional wrestling match an unforgettable one. And honestly, I've spent most of the year terrified that he's going to get hurt, because just with the sheer volume of matches he's doing, and these are, you know, pretty substantial matches. It's not like he's getting in and out there in 5 minutes. He's wrestled. Spent more minutes in the ring than he has done for like 20 years. I don't have the exact numbers here, but just the sheer durability of the man to not get hurt, to not, you know, fall awkwardly or pull a muscle or, you know, tear something. It's incredible. Like, the gods are smiling down him. I hope I'm not jinxing it at this point, but we're so close. Like, just get him healthy to Wrestle Kingdom and let him go out on a high. And I'm absolutely sure he will. So yeah, I have to, so I'm really, really impressed with what Tanahashi's done this year. And just, you know, the matches are still so good. And it almost makes you think, oh, maybe he shouldn't retire. But he should. No, I'm glad he's calling it a day on his own terms. So, yeah, very, very nice. We do need to talk about his opponent.
Oh,
for Wrestle
Kingdom. He has one?
Or lack thereof. So a lot of people were expecting an announcement on this show. We didn't get one. We thought there was going to be an announcement at the press conference. We didn't get one either. Now, we do have this show in Anzhou coming up, which, of course, is the hometown of Kazuchika Okada. And it's also taking place on Kazuchika Okada's birthday. And we had a little backstage segment after this show with Gedo coming up to Tanahashi saying, I'll find you an opponent. So to me, all signs are pointing to Okada. So if you put a gun to my head and like, who do you think the opponent is going to be? I think it's going to be Kazuchika Okada for all those reasons. Some people that I talk to are convinced it's Okada. They think that's nailed on. Now, personally, I've got no interest in that. I mean, I've seen enough of those matches fairly recently, and I still have a bad taste in my mouth about the way Okada left the company and refusing to put anyone over on the way out, and him, you know, in the ring going, yay! Like, that was just embarrassing shit. And I don't think he should be welcomed back into the company with open arms for the, you know, the biggest spot in years. I don't even think he wants to do that. I'm curious to see like how the Japanese fans respond to that. I don't think it's a good fit. I think there are other options that would be more desirable to me. But, you know, again, if you were to ask me who I think it is right now, I do think it is Okada. You know, maybe they don't even announce it at Anjo. Who the fuck knows? Maybe they'll just announce it at one of the Christmas Korakuens at this stage. But I think it's undeniable that there have been teases towards Shinsuke Nakamura, not least during this match, him doing the landslide move in the closing stretch. And then he talked about it backstage and saying, you know, I even work with different companies. My career is linked to yours and blah, blah, blah. He did explicitly mention it. I think that's a dangerous game to play. Like, I mean, some people have said that they interpreted that as him sort of wistfully being like, oh, well, I know we can't wrestle each other because we're in different companies, but, you know, you'll still have a place in my heart because of our rivalry and blah, 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 blah. That's not how I interpret it. Like, to me, that looks like him teasing that Shinsuke Nakamura is going to be his opponent. But it's a very weird situation because we had this press conference with no announcement, which, you know, maybe that wasn't the plan. Maybe there was supposed to be an announcement there. Who could possibly say? And I'm asking myself, why has nothing been announced? And there was a situation with Fightful this morning where they posted that there was going to be some news about the Tanahashi situation, and then our friend Fraser Japan like challenged them on that and said, look, I hope you know you're not going to be spoiling anything because that would be really disrespectful. And then that tweet got deleted, but the news story has gone up, and I can read it to you, Damon.
Sure. He said, by all means.
It's gone up in the last few minutes. So this is from Fightful. It says, one of the greatest wrestling careers of all time is coming to a close. Hiroshi Tanahashi's retirement is upon us, and he's set to end his 26-year career at New Japan Pro Wrestling's Wrestle Kingdom on January 4th. The subject of his opponent has been heavily speculated. Fightful Select has learned more about the planned reveal. As of November 6th, the match wasn't officially signed and delivered, but we've been told that the candidates are down to three possibilities.
This is news?
New Japan Pro Wrestling plans on conducting a press conference to announce their plans. Fightful had reported that Shinsuke Nakamura was discussed internally, but was seen as a pipe dream. He's not expected to be the opponent. So something's not right here. And look, I'm not blaming Fightful, because Fightful just report the news, right? If the question to me is, who is leaking this information to Fightful now? Who has told Fightful to go out on Thursday, the 6th of November, and say Shinsuke Nakamura is not expected to be the opponent? And what purpose does that serve? Because like I said, I've talked about this before, there's a pattern of behavior there of using Fightful to get ahead of the narrative. Takeshita is amazing, and all the companies are working together to make him into a global superstar. We remember that one leaking before the G1, before the G1 final. Oh, Tony Khan doesn't like evil and didn't demand for him to be in the G1 final. We got that one as well. And the report a few weeks ago, oh, Nakamura talk is just a pipe dream. So again, I'm asking myself, why is more information leaking now, 2 days before New Japan hopefully finally fucking announce the match, if they even bother doing that? Like, you know, they're going to get to announce the match? Is it going to be spoiled by the time you listen to this? I don't know. Did the person leaking this information get his way and is trying to control the narrative to minimize his own perceived involvement so people don't get upset. I'm not mad. Please don't put in the newspaper that I got mad. Or did this person not get his own way and is, you know, eventually going to spin some yarn about, you know, being a good business partner who had no issues with New Japan working with other promotions and was always keen on standing back to let them do what's best for New Japan. Like, it's the war for hearts and minds, isn't it? And look, we're all friends here and our impeccable track record speaks for itself. We speak to people who know things. We speak to people with connections to New Japan at various levels. We speak to people with connections to Yankoid wrestling companies at various levels. And look, directly or indirectly, I've heard about this situation from numerous people, numerous companies, numerous countries, all saying the same thing, that there is one person who doesn't want Shinsuke Nakamura to be in that match. What is the value of that one person's opinion to New Japan Pro Wrestling? I don't know. They need to decide that, right? They need to have a long, hard think about that. Because I've got my own opinions on that, but they need to figure that out because it's clearly a big decision that's going to go to the wire. And to be quite honest, I've no idea what they're still negotiating at this point or if it's finalized. I genuinely don't know. But I do know that this person wants to look like the good guy here. And I'll be very interested indeed to see how some of the bigger, like the biggest outlets that cover Western wrestling news report on this situation when it's all said and done, because they know, they are fully aware that there is one person trying to stop the Nakamura match from happening. And it's not WWE.
It's like, not.
Are they going to show some guts and tell the truth and risk upsetting this person? Because we know he is very easily upset. Are they going to do the right thing and risk burning those bridges? Or is it going to be whitewashed with loads of dishonest flim-flam about, oh, it was a tricky situation politically and there were lots of moving parts and WWE are notoriously difficult to deal with and they couldn't work things out in the end? Because if that's what it comes, if that's what is released, if that's what the narrative is afterwards, I say this, dear listener, bullshit. Bullshit. There is one person doing everything he can to stop this match from happening. Doesn't take a genius to figure out who.
Well said. You know, it's November the 6th as we record, and the announcement still hasn't been made. What possibly could be the issue? What possibly could be the holdup? It's a match. It's Hiroshi Tanahashi's final match. The tickets themselves, you know, are selling very well for Wrestle Kingdom this year. Good on New Japan. So it's not like we're upsetting the apple cart when it comes to New Japan Pro Wrestling by announcing the match. You have a Wrestle Kingdom presser where they talk about all the big matches and all the stars are there to talk about their involvement in Wrestle Kingdom minus one match. Strange, don't we think? Would it be weird for me to say that we've been told by a couple of individuals that Shinsuke was originally scheduled to be at that presser? Now, whether when that fell through, when they decided not to do that, when, I don't know. And let's be honest here. I don't think I'll know or will know 100% that's the case unless I saw a plane ticket saying, okay, he was supposed to be there. That's the word that we got. And obviously it didn't happen. Again, it would be, if it is Okada who's going to wrestle Hiroshi Tanahashi in Hiroshi Tanahashi's final match at the Tokyo Dome, why wouldn't we announce that? Why wouldn't we announce that months ago? Why wouldn't we announce that whenever? Why? Because that was never the original plan. I'll say that it's amazing to me where we are in the state of pro wrestling and specifically New Japan Pro Wrestling when this has to occur. I think if you asked Hiroshi Tanahashi, and again, I don't pick up the phone and necessarily have a line of communication with him, but it feels to me that with his subtle hints and his kind of innuendos that he would want and it was looking forward to wrestling Shinsuke. for the final time. That said, it is odd and it is strange. And again, I have no problems with anybody reporting anything at this point, but I do know that there are a lot of people that know big pieces of the pie of the truth of what is happening. And they all seem to align in the one thing of, well, we're kind of handcuffed. And the reason why we're handcuffed is because we can't upset the apple cart. Take that for what it is. You know, the best I can, I'm not going to sit here and rant and yell and be like, one guy is destroying our company and blah, blah, blah. That's not my bed. I don't have to make that bed. I don't, you know, that's for New Japan to fucking sort out. But, you know, when it was my understanding that this was in the works for quite a while, like this wasn't something where they just picked up the phone in October and said, hey, is he available? Is Shinsuke available? This is something that they've worked on for quite a while. And the fact that, like, what would be the thing that stops it? And I'll tell you flat out, and trust me, if anybody knows me, listens to the show or anything, you know I am the furthest thing from a WWE supporter, watcher, follower of their fucking universe. I could give two shits about fucking WWE. Absolutely zero do I give a fuck. But from every person that we've talked to, and we've talked to a lot, every person, WWE is not holding this up and never has held it up. And they're in the position of, hey, listen, if you figure it out, he's available. What can I fucking tell you? So what would be holding that up? What would be the jam up, if you will? Well, doesn't take brain surgeon to fucking figure that out, right? Which I'll be very honest with you on my feelings on that is incredibly disappointing. Incredibly disappointing. But it is what it is. So they'll figure it out. They obviously have a plan B. It all signs kind of like there are plenty of signs that point to Okada, but then there are plenty of things that happen that kind of say, well, the Nakamura thing's not dead by any stretch of the imagination. And as best as I can tell you, it feels like the company wants Nakamura. That's the best I can tell you. And they're going to have to settle for Okada because they are walking on eggshells. And if I'm wrong, let me know. But from the countless people that we've talked to, they're saying the same things that I'm saying to you right now. So there's enough people that have bits of this information and pieces of this information, and we're all trying to compile it to give you, the listener, the skinny. Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. Again, it is what it is. That's what we know as of right now at 5:00 Eastern Standard Time. If that changes, I'm sure you people will be the first to know, but that's where we are. That's exactly where we are. And, you know, I'm kind of tired of walking on eggshells too, to be quite frank. I would love to tell you everything we know, but honestly,
we pretty much have by this point, to be fair. I've not exactly been subtle, but you know. There we go. I'm bored of talking about it, to be honest. So I just want to announce the fucking match.
But again, I don't. Yeah, me too. But okay. But when it's all said, like, this is almost like election results in some way, where it's like, okay, not all the votes have been tallied, and it's neck and neck, and you don't know which way it's going to go. So there is hope that we can get a Nakamura match. And here's the thing too.
Called Florida for George Bush. So.
They've called Florida. All right. Well, we're fucked. We don't have the delegates. But you get my point. Like, and I also want to stress something too here. This is not a narrative either way. Like, if Okada's the main event, would I prefer Nakamura? Yes, I would. For all the reasons that we talked about before. But I'm not shitting on that. I'm shitting on the idea that there is some political pull that had to make that happen. Like, that's disappointing to me. I don't give a fuck about AEW. I don't care. I honestly haven't watched AEW, and I couldn't even tell you the last time I watched a complete show. I just don't care. It's not me going online and hating AEW. I don't give a fuck. And I could say the exact same thing about WWE. Let me let you know, the pro wrestling I watch is New Japan Pro Wrestling, and trust me, I can barely fucking stomach that sometimes. All right? I don't give a fuck. I think Joel feels the same way. It's the idea of someone having enough influence on the biggest show of the year that's unfortunately disappointing to me. Sorry, that's the way I feel. Otherwise, go fuck your mother.
Yeah, it should be one person's decision who Hiroshi Tanahashi wrestles in his last match, and that's Hiroshi Tanahashi.
Thank you.
And the impression I get from him is that he would like it to be Shinsuke Nakamura, and that should be the end of it.
Not in this world. Not in this fucking world.
Yeah, sad. Sad times. What have we become? Just part of the Yankoid wrestling proxy war. You hate to see it. So, main event of this show was Konosuke Takeshita defeating Hiroki Goto 24 minutes, 20 seconds with Raging Fire to retain the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship match. I thought it was really good, as you'd expect. Some people saying they're not enjoying Takeshita closing stretches. They think his finish comes out of nowhere. I didn't really feel that. I thought it was a good match. But
yeah,
to be honest, I was watching it through a cloud of annoyance that they'd not announced the Tanahashi opponent yet. So I was like angry Pingu sitting there watching what was a really good match, but not particularly enjoying it. But yeah, the match happened. Yota Tsuji came out afterwards, so he's challenging for the belt at Wrestle Kingdom, and it's going to be a title versus title match. And again, what I've said before about them streamlining the Wrestle Kingdom card, perhaps that is part. I've just fucking fed you, Scrumpy. What? maybe they didn't want to have a global title match and a world heavyweight title match. So this is a way for them to, you know, not have to have two separate matches for that. I don't know. Or maybe it's to lend Yota Tsuji some credibility as a challenger. And to be, if it was that, like I'd say they've learned their mistakes from last year where they just had Shota Umino coming out and being like, hey, I guess I'll challenge in the main event. So I think they've done a pretty good job in making Tsuji look strong, and he's coming off the back of big win over Gabe Kidd and a big win over Tanahashi. I think he looks like a credible challenger. And as I said before, he is my guy. Like, he might not be the greatest bell-to-bell wrestler in New Japan, but he, I feel, has got New Japan in his heart. In a year when a lot of people have been saying that, I think he actually talks the talk. No, he walks the walk, doesn't just talk the talk. And just one moment is always going to stick in my mind. The reason I love Yota Tsuji was during that Okada retirement tour when Okada was doing the commentary and was ringside, and Yota just walked up to his face and called him a disappointment. And was like, are you proud of yourself? Are you happy with how things are going here? How are you exiting this company? This is just disappointing. Disappointing. And said that right to Okada's face and made him look like the bitch that he is. So for that reason and that reason alone, Yota Tsuji is always going to be my guy. And he's the guy who should be given the keys to the car. And I think on paper, it looks like a really great match. I mean, they've had terrific matches before, and I'm sure the stage and, you know, the bright lights of Wrestle Kingdom and all the pageantry and everything, that they're going to have a killer match. And I'd say the quality of the match is maybe more important than the result. The more I think about it, Damon, the more, if this Wrestle Kingdom, like the biggest Wrestle Kingdom for years, like crucial for the future of New Japan Pro Wrestling, in live on TV Asahi and likely in front of a sold out or close to sold out Tokyo Dome, if that ends with the top two matches being Okada winning and Takeshita winning, two AEW wrestlers winning,
we're done.
That is unacceptable for me. Yeah, honestly, I'd be done if that happened. That would be too much.
Yeah. Yeah. You would think that with that audience potentially live and on television that they wouldn't. Right, they know they have to. Like, we talk about making new stars a lot and when that should occur and so forth. I mean, I think that's like the time to do it. So you would hope they would do the right thing. The problem is this. It, and again, this is a recent, when I say recent, like year or two. Go take care of that cat. A year or two. It's you don't have a lot of confidence in the company being able to navigate those waters and do what we might perceive as the right thing. So you are hesitant to just go ahead and be like, okay, this is the moment. It all makes sense. Pull the trigger. Away we go. Do I think Yota Tsuji is like the guy that should carry the torch and be the flag bearer for New Japan Pro Wrestling now for the next 5, 10 years, whatever? He's the best choice we've got. And I know that doesn't sound encouraging, and it doesn't necessarily sound like a glowing endorsement. It's the best option we have right now, and I think it's a damn fucking good one. Again, is it you know, generational? I think the jury is still out, but it's the best one we got. And you're right, if he's gonna wear, you know, and it's not like he wears it on his sleeve, mind you, but you do get that sense of, okay, this guy is fighting for the company, and he wants to take on that challenge. And I say, let's give him a shot. Like I said, he's the best thing, the best option we have right now. Now, again, I know people love to be sour on things that potentially could be good, but I don't know. Maybe it's a self-defense mechanism. Maybe it's a whatever it is. Takeshita is awesome. And I think his closing stretches are fine. And I think that him in the ring, I still think he's a fucking fantastic pro wrestler. I still think at his age, he's still got plenty to grow. He looks the part. If you told me, okay, he's exclusive, he signed, he's there, I'm going to be honest with you, I'm all in. All my chips are on the fucking table. I think he's that good. The issue that I have is the fact that for the company's sake, it's probably not the wisest move, right? I'm with Joel. If Okada walks out there, gets the win, and I think anybody who goes in that ring against Hiroshi Tanahashi will probably get the win, and then you follow that up with, you know, Takeshita successfully defending. I think I'm very curious about January 5th and 6th. Let's put it that way. I'm very curious to see the direction of this company. And I'm looking at it with my eyes partially closed and my hands at my head, like, oh boy, what are we doing? They have an opportunity. They really do have an opportunity to help grow the audience once again, make stars. Aaron Wolf, I think they're doing everything they can correctly to help make that a moment as well. It's a big show. And I hope and pray that they have all their ducks in a row. What, again, scares me is that it's November 6th, and I don't even know if they got three quarters of their fucking ducks in a row.
Swiper says, is Tsuji promising to bring back the old belt? Clear indicator that he's losing at the time. I don't think he said he wants to bring back the old belt. I think he said he wants to bring back the lineage, not the actual physical belt itself. And I think that would be a smart move. Like, at the end of the day, I don't give a fuck what the belt looks like. I understand why they dropped the V4, because there were a lot of issues with the person who made that belt and who owned the property, the intellectual rights to it, and they were misbehaving or whatever. But I think it was weird and unnecessary to sever the whole championship lineage of that from the V5 belt. So if they are uniting those two timelines, then yeah, fine. Like, that to me would make sense, rather than it just being this brand new belt that appeared in, what was it, 2021, when Ibushi decided that they were going to do that. So
yeah,
I don't think that's an indicator either way what's going to happen. So I feel it's got to be Tsuji, man. We can't have the two top singles titles in New Japan going away for several months. Like,
it's nonsense.
The uncertain future that New Japan's coming up and hopefully getting some new eyeballs, the champion needs to be there week in, week out. Like, we can't have, there's a time and a place for an absentee champion, and ideally with some sort of kayfabe.
They don't work.
That. But yeah, this is not the time and the place for it.
They don't work. Look at the history, and the rather recent history of New Japan. And when they do that, it's like those titles just, you forget they even exist. Like, they go away. Like, it's not a good thing. And you would hope that wouldn't happen to your world title, but, you know, not for nothing. You don't have a good track record, New Japan. So, yeah, fingers crossed. What would bring you greater disappointment? Okada winning or Tsuji not winning the belt?
Tsuji not winning the belt, I think. Well, it comes in pairs, right? Let me throw it back at you. Would you rather have Shinsuke Nakamura in the Tanahashi match, so Nakamura wins, but then Takeshita wins, or Okada is the opponent, Okada wins, and then Tsuji wins?
Tsuji's more important.
Yeah, I think I agree.
Tsuji's more important for the long term. Again, the moment, the match, the all of the spectacle of it, yes, but that's fleeting. That ends when the lights go on in the dome and they're like, okay, hit the exits. Last train is in an hour. That's when that ends. That's when that magic ends. Tsuji winning, that is your future. And to me, that's vital at this point. So as much as I want Nakamura, if you said, okay, Okada's it, but Tsuji's your future, I'm okay with that. I would take that deal.
Okay, so then we did get some Wrestle Kingdom announcements. We got some ticket updates. It's like it's nearly 32,000 sold at the moment, which is fantastic. It's the biggest selling Wrestle Kingdom for years and years. Since when? Okay, would that have been since Wrestle Kingdom 2020, the one that we went to, I suppose? And yeah, I expect that number to go up significantly, and I think there's every chance that it's a sellout. I think if they announce Shinsuke Nakamura, it definitely will be a sellout. But yeah, we've got some match announcements. So Takeshita versus Tsuji is official. We have Aaron Wolf versus Evil. That one is official. And we've also got Saya Kamitani against Suri as an official match. And I think that's a double title match as well. I think it's the IWGP Women's against the Strong Women's title or something like that. So yeah, we've got a few matches announced. Morning says, what's more damaging to New Japan, if they talk themselves out of Tsuji winning the belts at Wrestle Kingdom, or if they talk themselves out of Aaron Wolf beating Evil? Which one will be the biggest blunder?
I wouldn't be surprised if Aaron Wolf does lose the match, but like there's some type of like, I would lost the match, but I still beat their ass afterward or some shit like that. You know what I mean? Like, you got to get the fucking photo of him, you know, with his hands raised after doing something. But I think there's a definite possibility. Again, think about how New Japan books. Guy's first fucking match against Evil, who is always in the mix, whether it be New Japan Cup, whether it be G1 Finals, whether it be whatever. He's always in the mix. I'm going to be honest with you. I can't see Aaron Wolf winning. And if he wins, it's like slip on a banana peel kind of bullshit. Plus, he's been getting the upper hand in all these, kind of building the angles kind of thing. I would not be surprised if Evil wins. And again, by some nefarious means, but he still winds up, you know, getting his, beating the shit out of him, and by the end of the match, you know, he's perceived as the winner, but he on paper lost the match.
Do you not feel that like seriously compromises his superstardom potential? Like, if he just immediately is just like everybody else, just another guy who's lost the Evil's,
it's New Japan Pro Wrestling, man. Like, I they do that all the time. How many times have they had big matches against somebody, and then the guy you think, oh, I mean, go through the roster of people who they, Jay White, fucking Okan. I'm sure there were before that. I mean, again, this is the same company that every fucking time where you're like, oh, Kata's winning this fucking title. Nope. Lose, cry, walking back. Naito's winning this fucking title. Nope. Everyone's looking at each other like, what the fuck? they do these kind of things. And especially in a guy's first fucking match. I'm telling you, I think Evil wins, but you know, at the end of the day, he looks strong and beats him up and throws him to the back and all that shit, and he has his hand raised and the flash bulbs can go off. I don't think it's a slam dunk that Aaron Wolf wins this fucking match.
All right. Daryl says, Tanahashi interviewed Kenny, but was asked himself who would be the next ace. Tana basically said the audience chooses the ace, not the office. So with that having been said, is Evil the new ace of the company? Has none of the new guard gotten over enough, as it seems Tanahashi suggests?
I'm still going with Yota Tsuji, thank you. We'll see what happens there. But yeah, I see the point. And Hiroshi Tanahashi's right. You know, it's like, it's the crowd. But I will also say this, that I don't think New Japan does a great job of pivoting, right? So while I agree with that statement to a large degree, when they have something set in their mind, they kind of just stick their fingers in their ears and la, 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 and go right down the path that they have. So, again, on paper, I agree, but I don't know if necessarily the proof's in the pudding in that statement.
He's got another question here. It says, are you all as bewildered as I am about how cold this Wrestle Kingdom hype is? No Tanahashi opponent yet. Tsuji being served up like stale bread for the main event. House of Torture shenanigan fest for Wolf's debut. I totally think they messed up with the G1 winner challenging at King of Pro Wrestling. They got to stop that. I missed the 5-month main event build to Wrestle Kingdom. Now we have 2 months during the slowest time of the calendar and another fucking double gold shit fest to sit through. They're killing me.
That's why we're here. that's why you listen, and hopefully you pay $10 a month to our Patreon to get even better stuff than what you get here. Yes, I mean, that's the honest to God truth. And when I go on my little mini rants once a year about New Japan fucking everybody over, that's what I'm talking about. What you're feeling right now is what a lot of people feel. But yet we're still here doing a show every fucking week, and others doing a show every fucking week to help us all kind of get through the mud. So we'll get you hyped. Don't worry. You keep listening. We'll do the heavy lifting for New Japan Pro Wrestling. We'll get you hyped, because I'm already getting a little bit excited for everything that we talked about. So we got you. We got you. Keep listening.
Okay, let's talk about World Tag League then. That's the last thing. Oh, no, it's not. It's the second last thing we've got to talk about. So World Tag League lineups have been revealed. In the A block, we have got Bishamon, Yano and Oleg Bolton, Tsuji and Gabe Kidd, which is quite an interesting one, because yep. I've heard some people saying they thought Gabe Kidd was done, but no, he's still around for now. Evil and Don Farley, Taichi and Satoshi Kojima, because Tomohiro Ishii got injured during an AEW show, Damon. I made a little...
You should tweet something.
Comment on that on Twitter. they did not like that one, did they, Damon?
Fucking idiots. I love dumb people. I love the fact that when you do that, you just a litany of idiots just lining up just to be like, idiot, idiot, idiot.
Every time, Damon. Every time. I wonder to myself, I think, like, is this too low effort? Like, is this too obvious rage bait? Are people going to be like, no, Joel, you're just being silly now. Like, come on, stop with the bait. But no, every single time they're like, "Oh, you stupid idiot! Like, how can you say that?
Your brains are made of worms."
That's why I keep doing it.
Yeah, I know. I don't know how. I get that it fuels you. It's your fucking energy. It's like you hulk up with that. I don't know how you deal with these fucking brain dead idiots. But God bless you. You do it.
It's my good friend King on the North, who always signal boosts every tweet that I do. we're working together, right? We're in cahoots, because he will amplify it to all the AW fans, and then right. I get loads of engagement. So we've got like a little tag team thing going on. It's
fantastic. Really cool. Thank you for doing our dirty work. We truly appreciate that, you idiot. Also, what was I going to say? I fucking forgot. Whatever. It wasn't important. Who cares? Who gives a fuck? Good.
Right, so yeah, we got Taichi and Kojima. We have El Desperado and Shuji Ishikawa, which is really out of left field.
All Japan Pro Wrestling, wow.
We've got Shingo Takagi and Drilla Maloney. We have the Punishment Team, Yujiro Takahashi and Chase Owens. And then B block, we've got the Knockout Brothers. We got Zach and Oiwa, once again, their second entry. We have the returning Monster Source, Alex Zane and Lance Archer.
All right. Lance Archer, how about that? Yeah. That's his first time back in a long time.
Yeah. Well, Monster Source were in it 2 years ago. Right. They were not in it last year, but very cool to see them back. I like them both. We've got Tanahashi and El Fantasmo, Shota Umino and Yuya Uemura, like David Finlay with Hiromu Takahashi.
Wow.
Brett O'Khan and Callum Newman, Ren Narita and Sanada. And that is B block. So, like, all in all,
I don't
say I like it.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
They're a team.
I'm not going to watch it, but I like it.
I mean, we might actually. Are we taking off or we're not taking off? I guess we're doing the slog. We're doing it.
I'm open. Like, if there's anyone listening who would like to guest host and do a bit of World Tag League stuff, please do reach out. I'm not expecting to get, like, you know, the first time over the
everybody.
I've got like 10 entries, and I'm having to tell people, "Oh, sorry, you were really good, but we just didn't make the cut this year." And I'm like, "Please, will someone deal with this troublesome World Tag League for me?"
Cricket. If anybody wants to, by all means, I got no problem sitting a show or two out, but knock yourselves out. But I think that's a pretty interesting lineup. I saw Finley and Hiromu. I was like, God damn, I like that. I like Drilla and Shingo. I like that. Joel, has this little non-affiliated War Dogs thing. Is that the best thing we've seen in a couple months? It's shaking things up. It's made things a little bit interesting.
Yeah, absolutely has. And now I'm really curious, like, who's going to win? Because there's a lot of people who don't have spots for Wrestle Kingdom. So this, I think, World Tag League has become quite high stakes because there's a lot of people going to be missing out on this show. Now, interestingly, they've not announced who Konosuke Takeshita's partner is yet.
Oh, sure, you don't think?
Maybe coming soon. Yeah, I'm sure. We'll just sort of ironing out the details on that.
Sure
it'll definitely be taking part. As Azumar Evil says, whose wife did Mikey Nichols bang to get them excommunicated and their team name stolen and transferred into a stable they're no longer a part of? So, yeah, no Mikey and Shane again, which is... I mean, I'm sure it just comes down to money. Like, there's other guys who are cheaper or maybe, like, will pay for their own flights to go out to Japan or whatever. But, yeah, I did see that and think, like, oh, that's a shame. But to be fair, I'm not really going to be losing sleep over it. But it's going to be a semi-final format. So we're going to get, I think, A1 versus B2 and then B1 versus A2. And they're stretching that out over two shows. So there's going to be one of the semi-finals on December 10th in Nagasaki, the other semi-final on December 12th in Kagoshima, and then on December the 14th in Kumamoto, they're going to have the final. So they're really milking it. And I suppose we'll do our usual thing and just look at what the lineups are for the final block night. So December 8th in Hiroshima is the last set of A-block matches. So no particular order. There's Yoshihashi and Goto against Drilla and Shingo, Kojima and Taichi against Gabe Kidd and Tsuji, Shuji Ishikawa and Despy against Chase Owens and Yujiro, Oleg Bolton and Yano versus Don Fale and Evil. So I would imagine that Yoshihashi and Goto against Drilla and Shingo is going to be significant.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'd say Kojima and Taichi against Gabe Kidd and Tsuji, but I mean, Tsuji's already got his Wrestle Kingdom match, so I don't...
Yeah, I think you can eliminate him. Yeah.
Any of the other teams on A-block you think are reasonable shouts? Because to be honest, to me, it looks like Bishamon probably going all the way, but yeah, anyone else from A-block that you think are in with a shout?
I like Shingo and Drilla.
Yeah, me too.
I think they have a shot because, again, what we're doing is we're thinking, all right, who's got shit going on and who's potentially might have shit going on. And those are two guys that got nothing going on. So I wouldn't be surprised. That might be a dark horse here.
Then for the B block final show, which is in, what did I say?
The 12th?
Fukuoka? Is it Fukuoka? Am I looking at the right thing? On the 9th. Yeah, so the B block final matches will be Yuya and Shota versus Knockout Brothers, Oscar and Yuta Ice. That's an interesting one. Oiwa and Zach against Alexander Lance Archer. Hiromu and Finlay against Callum and Great O'Khan. ELP and Tanahashi against Sonata and Ren. So the B block looks a lot more interesting to me. And yeah, it's a very, very difficult to call because, again, there's a lot of people who would otherwise not have anything at Wrestle Kingdom. So Yuya and Shota, I think they...
That's probably my pick. Yeah.
But Hiromu and Finlay as well. I mean, Hiromu, lest we forget, he won it last year with Naito.
That's true. Yeah, that's a tough one. I'm gonna go with Hiroshi Tanahashi and ELP to go on, and they'll have double duty that night.
Tanahashi did double duty.
That's correct.
Wrestle Kingdom. It looks to me like they might do the dreaded four way, and I wouldn't hate that actually. I think they could make it good, but I just think it might be a four way at Wrestle Kingdom just to try and get as many of
squeeze
these
many people on
as yeah. possible. Yeah.
You know what? So. Again, we talked about how this is going to be broadcasted on TV in Japan. Does it have to be the entire show? In other words, could they do like a block of matches that are just like, you know, available to New Japan World subscribers and the live audience, obviously, and then the live feed kicks in? Sure. With, you know.
They'll do a pre-show. Like I'm thinking like three matches pre-show, seven matches main card.
Okay. That's fair. I you know what, I'd rather have less than more. I know people look forward to that day. It's a nice payday for everybody. It is the most eyeballs that you'll have on you, and if you work all year, you kind of like you really want to be on that show. So, but again, sometimes I think more is less. So, or less is more. Less is more. Less is more.
Are you thinking four way as well at Wrestle Kingdom? Yeah. Like, what do you think the Wrestle Kingdom title match looks like?
I think that's a very good possibility. Again, just because it kills multiple birds with one stone. So I want to be at least a three-way.
Which teams do you think will be involved then?
Well, I think you'll have a mix. I think you could it feels like David Finlay and Hiromu, right? Just because they're just like, what else are they doing? Unless they're like challenging for like the TV title or something. I can't imagine that. I think they're in the mix. I think Drilla and Shingo are in that mix. I think Yuya and
Shota.
I think they're in the mix.
What about Zach and Oiwa?
I don't think
Zach's got to be on the main card. Sure,
you would think. I gotta be honest with you. I think he's TV title bound.
I don't know. That seems like a real backward step for him.
It really does. All right, but being in a fucking tag team schmoz, is that a step up? It's not a good Wrestle Kingdom year for Zach right now.
That's fine. Like I don't have a problem with that. Like you cycle guys in and out. You can't have everyone in high spots all of the time. Yeah, I mean, I suppose if I'm picking for like Knockout Brothers defending the title,
right.
I think Shota and Yuya, you've got to have them in there.
Right.
I want Hiromu and Finlay. Well, Finlay more than anything. I like them. Bishamon, like Goto, he's former world champion.
You would think?
They've got to be in there.
Dude, we're sitting here talking about the possibilities of winning World Tag League. That's
high
cool.
States, man.
Yeah,
States.
I'm digging. Yeah. I can't believe we're here, but I think this tournament, just the teams there, like, and the way that Wrestle Kingdom's laid out, and just kind of what we know and what we don't know, like, this is interesting. Like, this is there's a lot of like, okay. I mean, we got a little bit of time before we get there, but to help kind of fit a narrative, and we'll see what happens in a lot of these road to shows and all that stuff. I think this World Tag League might be one of the more interesting ones in a long time.
Well, I'm going to make a bold prediction here. I'm going to say that something happens with this unaffiliated War Dog situation. Maybe Naito comes back or something. So I think there might be something at Wrestle Kingdom that ties together all of those guys.
Mm. Okay.
Like, you know, you Gabe and Driller and Shingo and Hiromu and Finlay and all those people. So I think gun to my head, I'm saying for the tag match, we're going Knockout Brothers, Bishamon, Yuya Shota, and I think Zack and Oiwa. I think that would be a good vehicle to get Oiwa in there and do some cool stuff. So there we go. That's my prediction.
I'm just replacing them with Driller and Shingo. That's what I mean. We'll figure it out.
And the last thing to do is preview this show on Saturday. Hopefully we'll get it up before then. Saturday, November 8th in Anjo, which is on Okada's birthday. So we've got Tatsuya Matsumoto and Shoma Kato against Zane J and Katsuya Murashima. Second match, Tiger Mask, Tomoaki Honma, Oleg Bolton against Jacob Austin Young, Callum Newman, Great Okan. Third match, Gedo, Ishimori and Shingo against Sho, Doki and Yujiro. Fourth match is Taguchi, Yuya and Shota against Daiki Nagai, Oscar and Yota Tsuji. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Trio that is. Tsuji, Oscar and Daiki Nagai. I like that. Fifth match, Despi, Taichi, Yoshihashi and Goto against Hartley Jackson, Fujita, Oiwa and Zack. Then we've got the Never Openweight Six-Man Tag Team Championship match. Damon, who are the champions?
The Never Six-Man Champions are the team of, is it Yano?
Yes.
Ding. Hiroshi Tanahashi. It's Yano. It's Yo.
Ding.
And fuck me.
Yo's tag partner.
It's what?
Yo's tag partner.
Show. It should be. Yo and Wato.
Yay! Yeah, well done.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
So they are defending their championship against the challenger team of Dick Togo, Yoshinobu Kanemaru, and King of Darkness Evil.
Kill me.
And then the main event is Hiroshi Tanahashi Final Road Connection. Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Yuto Ice. Do we think Yuto picks up a win here?
Absolutely not. No chance in hell. I cannot see that, but I'm rooting for a good match and have fun out there, kids.
All right, that'll do.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network listeners. I am Jeff Hawkins, co-host of Shake Them Ropes, with a very special announcement. If it's been a while or you've never listened to us before, the original gang is back, myself and Rob McCarron, back talking wrestling. We have no idea where this show's going to go, where we're going to keep any of the old bits or any of the old things in there. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey, and we'd like for you to come along with us only on Shake Them Ropes on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.